is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Adam Smith, born 1723, died 1790, a Scottish economist, a philosopher, the author of a book published simultaneously with the American Revolution, 1776, The Wealth of Nations. In Adam Smith's view, we learn the basis of a new book, The Money Confusion, from my colleague John Tamney, the author. Subtitle, How Literacy About Currencies and Inflation Sets the Stage for the Crypto Revolution. What is money? What is the use of money? The quote from Adam Smith that John Tamney features in the beginning stages of his explication, the sole use of money is to circulate consumable goods. John, a very good evening to you. I believe we can be specific. Take us to the pin factory and what Adam Smith realized for all of us. Good evening to you, John.
Hey, thanks, John. Yeah, what Adam Smith reported on about capitalism in the opening pages of The Wealth of Nations was essential, and it's probably the most important observation ever achieved by a reporter, which is he was. He's noticed that a man working alone in a pin factory could maybe produce one pin per day. But a man working with several other men in that pin factory in specialized fashion, this collection of men could produce tens of thousands. And it was this observation that transformed much of the world. If when we divide up work, our capacity to produce abundance grows and grows. And money is the natural consequence of production. It is wherever production is, there are mediums of exchange that enable the exchange of what we produce for the goods and services that we want in return for our production.
The getting, John. How is the getting attached to money? Because I cannot eat money.
Absolutely. You cannot eat with money. You can't sleep with it. But you work for money, not because you want paper. But money is an agreement about value among producers that allows you to get in return for your work. You get up every day and do something. You get up and specialize because you want clothes, food, shelter, all those things. You work for money, but you're actually working for goods and services.
And you're producing money as a product of your labor, if I understand. And Adam Smith is identifying that divided labor makes a great deal of money produced so that you have gettable things. Now, that's all established. Has that led to progress, John? Is that a way of describing what's happened to the Northern Hemisphere since 1776?
Yes, it's led to staggering progress, whereas it used to be that man worked all of his short life in pursuit of just enough to get by, and frequently man starved in this pursuit. The division of labor has allowed people to do what they do best and get from others doing what they do best. In my case, if you told me to make the clothes that I wear, grow the food that I eat, build the shelter that I sleep under, I would die a very quick and unclothed and unfed death. But thanks to the ability to specialize, I can get all that I need in return for doing something that has something to do with what I'm good at.
I put all these things down. A division of labor creates prosperity, creates money, and money goes where labor is treated best, where the profit is best. How does that describe the iPhone, John? Because that's the example you use in your chapter.
Well, you think of the iPhone, it's the original IBM mainframe computer in the 1960s that filled a room and was incredibly slow and had no real practical application, cost well over $1 million. Yet now we have sitting in our pockets a supercomputer that's a microscopic fraction of the original IBM in size that costs next to nothing. And so it's an obvious result of this division of labor that everything that we have, everything in our possession is a consequence of global cooperation. And the more that we can spread that cooperation out, whereas the more that workers, and yes, robots, can do minute things well, the cost of everything continues to plummet to reflect this vision of work that allows for remarkable specialization. And when we're doing what we're specialized in, we're exponentially more productive.
All right. Now, there is a debate here. What is growth? Is consumption growth, John?
Savings is growth. Consumption is what happens after growth. Consumption is what we're what we want in return for our production. That's why we get up in the morning, is we want to get things. We want to consume, but we must provide goods and services so that we consume. We must bring something to market. And so production is the is what is necessary. Savings enable the production. A man working with a shovel is quite a bit less productive than a man working with a tractor. And a man working with a slide ruler is quite a bit less productive than a man working with a calculator. And so it's the savings that arm us with more machines to produce exponentially more.
We come now to the question of stable money. The dollar is said to be stable money, but it's also in a currency that is traded often back and forth. The foreign currency exchange is quite vital. It goes on all the time. And you turn to the question of a standard, a stable, a way of stabilizing money. Once upon a time, from 1944, following your reporting, John, 44 to 71, the stability of the dollar was based upon the price of gold. What happened, John?
In 1971, and economists and politicians had been pushing this for a while, the dollar's link to gold was severed. So the dollar that had formerly was stable, and the dollar that the rest of the world had their currencies pegged to, was suddenly bouncing around as a measure of value. To this day, elite thinkers say this was a good thing. We did not need the gold standard. But as I point out in the book, what verifies how wrongheaded the previous assertion is the explosion of currency trading that emerged from the severing of the dollar, which was the world's currencies linked to something stable.
So the foreign currency exchange that I referred to was born when the U.S. dollar was cut off from the price of gold. Is that correct?
Yes, undeniably. And I don't. This isn't me talking. This is me talking about a book by Craig Carman, a Wall Street Journal reporter, who probably doesn't agree with me on money, but he freely acknowledges that in the aftermath of the dollar's, the severance of the dollar's link to stability, which was gold. That's why gold has always defined money for thousands of years. Currency markets that didn't exist suddenly existed. At the time of Carman's book, which was in the early 2000s, there was $5 trillion of daily currency trading, $7 trillion when George Gilder wrote The Standard of Money. George Gilder has subsequently told me it is now $10 trillion of currency trading on a daily basis. That's a fairly strong signal that the markets want currency price stability, and since they don't have it, they're in the constant business of hedging money that doesn't hold its value.
And so therefore, the getting of things, which is the getting of an iPhone, or in my instance, the getting of a Black & Decker drill so that I can dig holes in my garden to drop in tulip bulbs for next spring, the getting of that requires a stable dollar, and it's not stable, John, because my purchase is taken on Amazon and then flashed through to China, where they have another currency, and then translated into the manufacturing of a lithium battery, which is made up of the lithium that was mined around the world, probably by a Chinese invested company, and taken back to China, and then arrives at my door. But all of those currencies are swimming back and forth, and there's no certainty in that chain, except for I get a good because I hope it's going to arrive. Have I said all that correctly, John?
Yeah, you've said it perfectly correctly. What you're saying is that we all are producing so that we can get something real in return. Money flows signal the flow of goods and services. And so the question then becomes, why can't someone in Argentina offer up Argentine pesos to a wildcatter in Texas in return for his oil? Well, why can't he? Because the wildcatter wants equal amounts of goods and services to the oil he delivers in Argentina. And as a consequence, only trusted money facilitates exchange among producers around the world. The problem is even the dollar, which is the world's currency, isn't implicitly trusted. And since it's not, since there is a belief, there's a market belief that the dollar's value is going to keep moving around, there's an enormous amount of currency trading to reflect the fact that producers still want to get equal value, but since they're not sure of it, they will hedge their exchange.
The book is The Money Confusion, How Illiteracy About Currencies and Inflation Set the Stage for the Crypto Revolution. We're headed to crypto, but first we're going to check in with Elon Musk and credit. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.